Welcome in to the newest edition of the Just In Time Sports Podcast. I am your host, Justin Jackson. And in this week's episode, or in today's episode rather, we'll be discussing the NBA free agency as it is in full-fledged swing. And we'll also be touching on Jack's hot take, which will be talking about the WNBA and the growth of the league. Now, as always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the Just In Time Sports Podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And also, don't forget to follow the social media handle at JTime Sports. I repeat, at JTime Sports on whatever social media you use. X, formerly known as Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, The Stunt. So Just In Time Sports is there with all your breaking news and updates. So any content that you see on Instagram, you're going to see on Threads. If you see it on Threads, you're going to see it on The Stunt. If you see it on that, you know, it's all the same. But I'd like you guys to follow all the pages. But if you're only a fan of one or two social medias, then, of course, make sure you follow and turn on your post notifications so you always know what's going on faster than your friends, before your friends. And that way you can drop some dialogue in the group chat. Now, as always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe. And don't forget to sit back and grade and learn something.
JTS. Yeah. Just In Time Sports.
Life is good. Life is good.
Look. This is Just In Time Sports. Come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart. He can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. How we talking basketball without a Jordan Brown debate? If you got the hottest takes, you better come and make your case. If you win a couple games, he might even show you grace. JTS on every platform. We growing adaptation. Numbers going off the charts. We create the separation. Louisiana till I die is where I'm from. I can't replace it. Some people minds are obtuse, but I like to be adjacent. Giving my opinion like I'm Nick Wright or I'm Jason. ESPN better watch out cause I'm coming for the spaceship. We even tweeting on Twitter, you can meet us in the spaces. Highlight clips of sports news, yeah, you gotta embrace it. We never had it easy, we just came from the pavement. I might be controversial, but I like to make my statements. This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake.
He can never show you fake.
Look, if you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight.
He gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it to you, he gon' tell it to you.
This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes.
Come and get it.
He gon' tell it to you straight, to you straight.
Welcome into the show, season 5, episode 16 of the Just In Time Sports Podcast. I am your host, Justin Jackson, and welcome into the NBA free agency special show. I purposely waited a couple of days into free agency to try and get as much of the news to you guys as possible in this show. If for some reason you're not following the Just In Time Sports social medias, again, with the social media handle at JTime Sports. So JTIMESPORT, all lowercase on all social medias. Other on Twitter, I believe it's all caps. But I repeat, at the at symbol for my older generation, JTIMESPORT. S is where you will find social media, is where you find my social media handle. You'll see the blue check on X and on Instagram, I believe. But you would definitely see the blue check on Twitter, and then you'll see all my posts. So for those of you who have not followed my social media, I wanted to wait a couple of days in the free agency, kind of wait till some of the big dominoes fell before really diving into this show, because I want to be as encompassing a free agency as possible, heading obviously into July 4th weekend. July 4th, you know, is always the anniversary of not only America becoming free from Britain, but also the Kevin Durant fireworks that went off in the Hamptons when he signed with the Golden State Warriors. So July 4th is always kind of the NBA free agency woosah period. Can I have just a day off on July 4th? That's what made the Kevin Durant news so huge when it happened, because everybody was off and everybody was home and everybody was looking at it. And then boom, Kevin Durant is a Golden State Warrior. So that's what made the news so big, was that usually people kind of take July 4th off. It's one of those things where it's not understood, that it's off, but the American people are off. Everybody kind of woo-sized. Even if you agree on fourth, you kind of announce on the fifth. Like, you kind of just give everybody a break. But again, Kevin Durant bombshelled the NBA on the 4th of July. But back to this current NBA free agency. Back to what's happening now. I woke up myself to a bombshell. And that was LeBron James signed a 2-year max extension with the Los, or 2 years max contract with the Los Angeles Lakers. And the figures came out to 2 years, $104 million. So this is significant for a multitude of reasons. The contract includes a player option and a no trade clause. So remember, a couple years ago, there was talk that the late Genie should trade LeBron. Get as many assets as you could. At that point, he was on the contract for 2-3 more seasons. Get as many assets as you could with him and begin the rebuild around Anthony Davis. And you could allow LeBron to go wherever he wants. A popular pick was Philly because of Joel Embiid. And they had Harden at the time. Philly was a popular pick. People were discussing going back to Cleveland. People were discussing going back to Miami, but there were, you know, people, there was options. New York obviously would have given the Lakers whatever they wanted for LeBron. And so that was the discussion there. So that's shut down now with the no trade clause. And then, of course, there's the second year being a player option. We have not seen LeBron James do this in a few years. LeBron basically, I don't want to say invented, but he popularized the 1+1, which was, it's a 2-year contract, but the second year is a player option. And it's done that way for a multitude of reasons. Number one, it keeps the pressure on the organization. He has not signed, to my memory, and if I get aggregated, it is what it is. But to my memory, he has not signed a multi-year true contract since for his last time with the Lakers, since he was in Miami. And he signed the sign and trade to go to the Heat. Even him back to Cleveland, it was a 1+1 for a multitude of years. Then he went to the Lakers. I believe it was a 1+1 the first year. Then he signed a 2+1, which was the last that he just opted out of. And then he signs a 1+1 again. So, it's designed, back to the topic, it's designed for a multitude of reasons. Number one, it keeps pressure on the organization. You must get better as fast as possible, or I leave, or I have the ability to walk out for nothing. Number one. Number two, it gives LeBron flexibility in his decision making. Because now, okay, I can start putting piece together. I can talk to guys. I can text guys. I can get in communication with guys and say, hey, how about next year? But what I can do, I can opt out of my deal and create the money for you to come. Okay? That gives the second option. The second thing. The third thing that it does is it puts a level of security in LeBron James's pocket without being beholden to the organization. Because remember, he can opt out after this summer and he's back to free agency and we're doing this dance all over again. However, let's just say, knock on wood, hopefully I don't speak any TNT. Let's say something happens. There's a precipitous decline. There's an ankle tweak. There's something that would prevent the Lakers from, in their mind, saying LeBron James is worth max dollars. LeBron can opt into his contract and they can't do anything about it. So it gives a level of security without being beholden to the team for LeBron. It puts the pressure on an organization again from LeBron to say, hey, I can walk next year for nothing if you don't work to put a better team around me. And also, it gives LeBron freedom to, again, talk to God and say, hey, what do you think about joining this team? How much money would it take? Is there some way we could do salary plus MLE, etc. You know, it allows a whole lot of flexibility for LeBron James to really truly control his future, something that he believes he cannot do if he's in a multi-year guaranteed locked in contract, because at that point he doesn't control his future. He can't get out truly when he wants. He can't get free when he wants. Like, he's beholden, he's stuck in the organization. like I said, something he hasn't done truly since he was in Miami. He signed a 3+1 in Miami. So that was his longest term contract since his rookie max extension, his rookie extension that he did with Cleveland, coming off his rookie deal. But what this also means, so we talked about the LeBron angle. Let's go to the front office angle. Let's go to the organization angle. Let's go to the other side of the coin. This also means that the Lakers cannot land anybody via free agency. That's what it's telling me, because it came out with a lot of reporting, myself included, that LeBron James is willing to take less if it means creating an MLE slot, for one, and it means bringing in a third guy. So bringing in for the right piece. Names that got floated: Jonas Valanciunas, Klay Thompson, DeMar DeRozan, James Harden were the four names that were very popular on the LeBron James want list. I can tell you right now, three of those guys are signed elsewhere. And we'll talk about, well, we'll talk about Jonas Valanciunas. He signed 3 years, $30 million with the Washington Wizards. And so that was a guy off my Pelicans. That hurt a little bit. But I kind of figured that divorce was coming because of how it kind of ended last year within the media. You can kind of start to see posturing was starting to get done on both sides. So makes sense that relationship is over, right? But he's gone. And we'll talk about Harden and we'll talk about Klay Thompson in a second. Right, but those two guys are also, as you may know, or should know, possibly know, they're not also in Laker uniforms. And so this was done with LeBron under contract, so he had his cap space. This was done with LeBron willing to work with the organization. This was done with, you know, fathers wanting their sons to be on the team, and you still couldn't get it done. And so that's a situation where it hurts if you are the Los Angeles Lakers here, because LeBron basically told you, I don't trust you, but I'm going to protect myself. I'm going to 2-year max it. I'm not going to 3-year max. I'm not going to trust. I'm not going to guarantee trust the rest of my career to you. I'm going to do a 1+1. Thank you for drafting my son. Thank you for hiring the coach that I liked. Thank you for doing these things. But the biggest thing about it I wanted to do was get on court help and get on court for me and AD. That's not done. So you can consider me a 1+1 kind of guy. So that's huge. Rob Pelinka hasn't been under 1+1 pressure from LeBron since he arrived in LA. Truly. Because the 1+1 pressure was the Magic. Pelinka got the 2+1. So this is the first time he's ever dealt with this this level of pressure being applied from LeBron and Rich Paul and the rest of the camp to get things done, or there could be changes. So that is huge there. But a little bit of note on the Lakers cap situation. So there is a possibility that this does not end up being a max. It's being reported as a max. It's being agreed to as a max. However, there's the potentiality of LeBron James agreeing to take $1 million less per year to avoid the second apron in the luxury tax system. Now, what does avoiding the second apron does? It allowed the Lakers a path forward to being better. Much easier path forward to being better. It does not demand they go player for player and dollar for dollar in trades. So let's just say if there was a big name guy who was looking to move. I'm not going to say names. I'm just going to say there was a big name guy who was looking to move. Let's say his contract was $35 million. If they were in the second apron, they would have to trade a player, one player, for that player for $35 million. Or they'd have to put pieces together to equal it out. So they either one player for $35 million, or let's say that the player A on the other team with $35 million, and they got a player on the team who makes $5 million. So that means two players is $40 million. So that means the Lakers have to trade two players for $40 million. Like, dollar for dollar, player for player. It makes trading almost impossible. Unless you're trading a role player for a role player, then it kind of can balance out. But for the most part, dollar for dollar, player for player is almost impossible. By being just $1 million under the second apron, they no longer have to apply to that. They don't have to do that anymore. So let's say player A is $35 million. He wants out. He wants to go to the Lakers. The Lakers could put D'Lo, who's at $18 million after his opt-in, Rui Hachimura, I think it's about 8 or 9, and then a couple of, and then they could be traded, of course, with assets on either side, whatever. And then the Lakers can go into the second apron. It is what it is. But they'd already would have achieved the trade dollar for dollar. They don't have to do a dollar for dollar, player for player trade. They also could acquire and use second round picks and trades. If they don't go in the second apron, they also don't. They can also participate in the buyout market if they don't go into the second apron. That could be huge. There's always 2 to 3 impact players a year that gets bought out by teams. That could be big for the Lakers if, they, in turn, they decide to not go into the second apron. If they get LeBron to agree to not go into the second apron, so that would be big as well. So huge. I mean, $1 million could change the scope of the Lakers offseason. So that is something to keep our eye on there. DeMar DeRozan appears to be the last piece of the LeBron puzzle. And what I mean by the piece of the LeBron puzzle is yay or nay. Valanciunas is a nay. Klay is a nay. Harden's a nay. We'll discuss the last two later. But DeMar DeRozan seems to be the last piece in the reporting that's available that could possibly be a Los Angeles Laker. In his case, there would need to be a signing trade because, of course, LeBron agreeing to the max, there's no room for DeMar DeRozan's salary. So it would need to be a signing trade, in which case the Lakers would have to go under the second apron in order to acquire him. Like I said, I would assume D'Lo and Rui, or D'Lo and Vincent, maybe. If the Lakers had it their way, it's D'Lo, Vincent, and probably a first in a signing trade deal for DeMar DeRozan. In which case Chicago probably bounces D'Lo out. Well, they don't even have a point guard. Maybe they keep D'Lo. But regardless, that'd probably be in a dream, in a fever dream scenario. That's what happens for the Lakers, is that they take D'Lo and picks for DeMar. D'Lo and a pick for DeMar DeRozan. And it's in a fever dream way. The Lakers get shoved into the second apron, and then this is their team. Which would be, Austin Reeves, LeBron, DeMar DeRozan, AD. I don't know who's playing the other spot. Maybe Jerry Vanderbilt. I don't know. And then you have a solid, well, you have Rui. So then you have a solid team off the bench. Like, that's not a bad team, right? And so that's something that they could obviously look into. But DeMar DeRozan appears to be the last piece of the LeBron possibility train. So that's, I woke up to that news this morning. It broke, it broke probably 2 minutes before I woke up before it and then put my phone down and then came back to it 5 minutes later and it broke in that 5 minute span. So that was pretty wild this morning, waking up to the LeBron James news. Again, with so many different things. It told you so much about what's going on in LA. If you put all the pieces of the puzzle together, it tells you what's going on in LA. Rob Pelinka can't get it done. He's only had one big acquisition in his career as a Laker GM, and it was Anthony Davis. And that was spearheaded solely by LeBron James. Russell Westbrook has big name value, but that was a major bust. And again, that was spearheaded by LeBron James and Anthony Davis going to his house instead of Rob Pelinka, who actually had locked in DeMar DeRozan the first time. And LeBron and AD undercut it and went to Russ' house and agreed that was what they wanted to do. And told Pelinka, we're going to do that instead. So, can't blame Pelinka on that one, but also can't give him credit for AD. So, that is definitely what's happened with the Lakers, is that they're just not a desirable organization right now, either through management, ownership, or agent reputation. They're just not the place to be at this moment in time. All right, but off the Lakers. We're off that. We're going to move into Donovan Mitchell re-upping with the Cleveland Cavaliers. 3 years, $150.3 million max contract. Not the 4 year max he could have signed. And it was a 2+1. So remember how LeBron James did the 1+1? Donovan Mitchell did a 2+1. Why is this significant? Number one, Donovan Mitchell can still be traded. So if you sign the 4 year big max, well, I know the super max, you can't get moved for a year. You can't get moved for the first year of the contract. But the 3+1 or just a full 4 year max, it would be a commitment to the organization. Like, hey, I know I don't want to be here. Also, you can get things like talk about no trade clauses, etc. When you get to that point. He, however, again, signed a 2+1. So he's not obligated by any of the trade restrictions besides the recently signed trade. So he can get traded before he can get traded trade deadline this year if he wanted to. He's not obligated to the Cleveland Cavaliers at all in terms of the refusal of being traded, saying I don't want to be traded. Also, he's only tied to the organization for three more years. He's only tied to his contract for 3 more years, which means before the 2027 season, he can opt out. And now he's an unrestricted free agent. And he's able to hit contractually, he's able to hit the market one more time to try and get I got distracted there. There's a news report that's saying it's 118 degrees in Vegas. Insanity. But he can get back into the market again and re-up contractually. So definitely a move. Kind of it's a half trust move. It's like people talk about the pool. Talk about step in, you're not gonna fall off. You stick 1 foot in and kind of pat around a little bit, but you don't go full deep in. It's kind of what this move was. He kind of stuck a foot in the organization. Like, okay, I'll see where you're going. And reportedly, he believed in Kobe Altman, who is the GM's vision for the organization. That's part of the reason why he agreed on the contract, that he wanted to see where Kobe Altman's vision was for the organization. So it's definitely Kobe, I'll give you a chance. I need my money, though. But I'll give you a chance to work your magic and to see what you can do for us, you know, running the team, of course, and what you can do for me to try and maximize me. Now, what does that mean for Darius Garland? And I spoke about on the preview podcast, that I expected some things to get split up. So far, I'm on 100% hit rate. I expected Trae Young and DeJounte Murray to get split up. DeJounte Murray's in New Orleans. I expected Kawhi and Paul George to get split up. Paul George, who we'll talk about actually next, is in Philly. I expected the Golden State Warriors backcourt to get split up. Klay Thompson, who we'll talk about after Paul George, is in Dallas. Like, so all those people that are expected to have split are splitting. I'm still waiting on Brandon Ingram and Zion. And then, of course, Mitchell and Garland was my next team that I said I saw a path back for Ingram in New Orleans. I did. I didn't see a path back for Mitchell and Garland in Cleveland. And I still don't. So now to me, especially when reportedly Mitchell believes in the plan from Kobe Altman, there's not much planning he can do with Darius Garland on the books. So obviously to me, Darius Garland must be on the way out or something. They're going to have to do something. Because they don't have a wing. J.D. Osmond cannot be your starting three in the NBA. And your backcourt tallest person is 6'3", and neither one of them plays defense. Like, so, again, like I assume the plan has to be moving Darius Garland out of Cleveland. Where? I don't know. But I'm just going to say that has to be the plan, because otherwise this makes literally no sense to re-sign in Cleveland, in my opinion, for Donovan Mitchell. I would have kept applying pressure by not re-signing at all. If there was no plan to get Darius Garland off the organization. But shifting away from Donovan Mitchell in Cleveland, I'm going to take a moment here to bask in being right. Oh, that felt good. Okay. For 2 months plus, 3 months plus, a long time, this guy, me, Justin Jackson, Justin Town Sports, has been saying Paul George will be a Sixer. I'm talking like during the season. I'm like, Paul George is going to the Sixers. If for no other reason than the plan was in place, it's the only thing that made sense logically. The Sixers had a plan. They had a year-long plan of they were going to go after Paul George. If Kevin Durant popped open or something like that, that was a different conversation. Reevaluate when you get there. But for what was common sensely seen, they're going to go after Paul George. And I spoke about it a long time ago, that was an easy path to acquire Paul George. It was simply sign him. Let Tobias Harris walk, sign Paul George. Because with the way it was set up, the Philadelphia 76ers had a full max slot available to them. Why? James Harden was gone and Tyrese Maxey hadn't re-signed yet. So I'm like, you can use bird rights on Maxey. So all you got to do is just sign Paul George in free agency and then sign Tyrese Maxey, his full rookie max extension, and you got a big three: Joel Embiid, Paul George, and Tyrese Maxey. And I kept saying it, and I kept saying it, and I kept saying it. And what happens? And when the Warriors reports popped up, Paul George is going to end up on the Warriors in a signing trade. Okay. When Miami rumors popped in, okay, I saw stuff about Paul is going to want to leave the California and the West Coast, and he might end up in Sacramento and Orlando. I reported on it, sure, but I didn't believe in it. And lo and behold, Paul George, PG-13, one of, if not the smoothest players in the game, is a Philadelphia 76ers. And again, it's not a sense of, oh man, I was right, which it is. It was also a sense of, it's the only thing that logically made sense. Now, the Sixers actually made other moves during the hustle. They brought back Kelly Oubre. They signed Eric Gordon. They signed Andre Drummond. And, of course, they bring in Paul George on his full max contract, 4 years, $212 million. Now, that I did not expect. I didn't expect the full four-year max. I would have thought a 2+1. Two-year max with a mutual option. If either side says no, it's no. Kind of thing. It's a mutual, with a mutual option. If either side disagrees, it's a no. But a full four-year max at $212 million, I believe it has a player option. But it's definitely a four-year max contract set at $212 million. That I didn't expect. I didn't expect the number. The location, totally not shocking. The number itself, that was shocking. And so, kudos to Paul George for landing such a deal at 34, 35 years old. But kudos to the Sixers, man. They had a plan for a year. And the plan was executed perfectly. It's rare that a plan like that is executed as well as the Philadelphia 76ers executed this plan. I mean, they got Paul George. Maxey developed. Joel Embiid had one of his healthier seasons. You found some role guys who can play. You got out of Tobias Harris's contract situation. You end up netting. You basically presto change-o'd Tobias Harris and Paul George. And then on top of that, you also bring in a backup center like Andre Drummond. So, as far as the Sixers have an offseason, this was a great offseason for the city of Philadelphia because they did everything they wanted to do. Now it's on them in terms of what they're going to accomplish. My expectations for them, I could say they could be in the East. They could actually make it to the finals. Now, my expectations is they'll be battling the Knicks to find out who has the right to play Boston in the Eastern Conference Finals. The Knicks, the Sixers, and the Bucks. I feel like those three teams have clearly moved ahead of everybody else in the East, right? And then, of course, Boston is the creme de la creme. We'll talk about them for sure in a couple of seconds. But to me, the Paul George move solidifies Philly's as Eastern Conference Finals or bust. To me, because of Boston, I don't see them as finals or bust, but there's no way they could be a second round team. There's no way. Like, again, Milwaukee, Boston, New York, and Philly. Those are the top four teams. Boston should be thinking finals or bust. Milwaukee should be probably thinking, another three should be thinking Eastern Conference finals or bust. Like, because that second three is so close. I mean, Giannis, Dame, Brooke Lopez maybe back. But like, that team is deep enough where it's like, you got Giannis and Dame. Like, they can get you to Eastern Conference Finals. New York, you got the Nova Boys, plus Randall, plus Mitchell Robinson, plus Alec Burks is still there. Like, they've got some depth there as well. And then, of course, like I said, Philly with Embiid, Paul George, Maxey, Kelly Oubre, Andre Drummond, and the rest of that team, Paul Reed, and the rest of that team that, like, on that bench, like, they can still make noise. So, to me, there's no way why, if you're the Philadelphia 76ers, you should not be looking at the fact that you're in the East Conference Finals or a bust. Injuries happen. I understand that. We understand that, right? But this is a situation where you've got to, if you're healthy, even if Embiid's 90% going into the playoffs, Paul is, 90%, Max is usually pretty healthy, you have to be in the East Conference Finals and don't get smashed in them. Like, you got to be in the East Conference Finals and go 6 or 7 if you lose. And where we can go back and point to and be like, okay, there are a couple of plays here, a couple of shots there from being in the finals. So that's expectations in Philly. I'm sure Paul George knows that. I'm sure Joel Embiid knows that. I'm sure Tyrese Maxey knows that, because he just signed his rookie max extension. So all three of those guys are looking like we got to be in the finals. Like, their mindset to be, we should be playing in June. We should be playing in the finals. Otherwise, the season was a failure. Me personally, I'm saying Eastern Conference Finals are bust. But if I'm in the Philadelphia organization, if I'm one of those three guys especially, I'm saying finals are bust. I'm saying parade or bust if I'm one of those three. I'm in an organization, I'm probably saying finals are bust. But Paul George, Maxey, and Embiid should be thinking about, we have a parade in Philly or we failed. As their ideals for their trio. But again, Paul George to Philly, 4 years, $212 million max contract. Another staple, this one actually to the common basketball fan hurt. And it's weird because he helped torture everybody's favorite team for 13 years. Specifically, the last 8. Klay Thompson. Klay Thompson, the Splash Brothers are over. The big three in Golden State's over. The dynasty in and of itself is over. Klay Thompson has signed a 3-year, $40 million deal. I'm sorry, 3-year, $50 million deal with the Dallas Mavericks, ending the dynasty. So before I go too far into that, they also picked up Najee Marshall. Dallas made another move as well. And I can't think of who it is right now, but they picked up Najee Marshall as well in their offseason. But going back to Klay Thompson's exit from Golden State, and they wrote up an article. Golden State wrote up an article mentioning his All Stars, mentioning his 4 titles, six finals appearances, the infamous Game 6 Klay, where he still holds the most points in a quarter in NBA history. NBA playoff history, the most threes made in a game in NBA playoff history. Truly legendary moments. His number 11 is going to go in the rafters. I'm sure he's going to have a statue outside of Chase Center. Like, truly legendary moments. Truly legendary patches. His tribute video might be 8 minutes long in Golden State whenever he goes back for the first time in Dallas, in the Dallas Mavericks uniform. There's going to be emotions when he steps on that court. I wonder how he's going to feel entering the visitor's locker room. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's different when you go into the visitor's tunnel and you go down a visitor's locker room. And when they're doing the Golden State introductions, you're not in the list. Like I said, it's just certain things where it's like, man, that's going to be so weird, right? But again, like, he helped torture everybody's favorite team. My favorite player is LeBron James, and I'm a Pelicans fan. Like, I remember all the travesty they caused both of my fandoms. Of course, beating them 3 times in the finals. Just 2 times in the finals. Yeah, both Kevin Durant. I remember the Kevin Durant finals. I remember Steph and Klay in New Orleans with the game where Steph hit the shot over AD, falling out of bounds. Whatever. I remember, but there's also the moments where it didn't affect me directly. I remember games since Klay against Oklahoma City. I remember the 3-point contest and they bowed at each other. I remember them, like, coming up and just being like, Mark Jackson basically inventing this style of play for Steph and Klay to just be free and like they were, in the park or like youth basketball where the 2 best shooters can shoot whatever they want. The elevator door screens. I remember, they had different hair. It grew out. It was short. It was straight. It was wavy. It was a beard. It was no beard. The uniform changes the closing of the Bay, but opening up Chase Center. Like, there was all these different moments in this, and of course, there's the tragic moments where in the finals against the Raptors, Kevin Durant is already gone with the Achilles, and then Klay on just a regular play. On why that play is so dangerous, though. He's going up for a dunk. Somebody hits his arms. He's a little bit off balance. Comes down the leg. Tears his ACL. Gets up. Shoots the free throws. And then walks back to the locker room. And the reason why he shot the free throws is, if you leave a game due to injury and you don't shoot the free throws, you can't come back in the game. Famously, Kobe Bryant did this when he popped his Achilles and basically ended his career. He tore his Achilles. They made the move on Harrison Barnes. At that point, Kobe was carrying a nothing roster into the playoffs. But he made a move on Harrison Barnes. Achilles pops. He knows it immediately. He told the story, like, I knew immediately what it was. That's why he starts grabbing. He didn't even do the traditional look back, hop around, what just happened to my leg thing. He sat down and immediately starts massaging and grabbing his Achilles. You can feel him. Like, you can feel it. You can see him feel his way up his leg, like, okay, that's what happened. He walks, club for the free line, nails the free throws, and walks off the court. Well, Klay does the same thing, but Klay, of course, is an ACL tear. So Klay thinks, he don't know what's going on, but he knows he shoots the free throws, then he checks out. He jogs off the floor, and you see his dad asking what happened. He goes, I heard a pop, and just keeps running. And then it comes out, it's a serious knee injury. Klay's done. And then on the recovery from the Klay Thompson ACL injury, he pops his Achilles in the other leg. So that's another recovery. So he missed two full seasons when that sets up the pool of Moody Kuminga Wiseman situation and the double timelines and ends up indirectly leading to Draymond punching Jordan Poole. Like, it was a lot of stuff happening because Poole ends up getting a lot of Klay Thompson minutes because Klay Thompson in there. So now Poole gets paid big, and that kind of leads some of the discourse, and, you know, a lot of it falls out in that. And it was, you know, so many memories from that era. Certain minutes from that time, the Golden State Warriors were an afterthought of a franchise. Before Steph and Klay, they were just the We Believe Warriors. Were like the only time in my life they mattered. Now, there was Run DMC, I think they were called, when they had Hardaway and Chris Mullin. And I can't think of the other guy on the team, but it was those three guys when the Warriors, but like in the 80s. You know what I'm saying? Like, so from that team to the We Believe team, the Warriors were irrelevant. And then from the We Believe to Steph and Klay in 2013-2014, tearing the league up, they were irrelevant. So the valuation of the franchise going from $360 million to, what is it, like $7 billion? Some ridiculous amount of money that it is now. And so all this was done during the Steph and Klay era, and it was just, like I said, they tortured your favorite team. Like, Steph and Klay, boom, 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 back and back threes, and they were the Splash Brothers and all this stuff, and it's over. The big three's over, the Splash Brothers over, the dynasty's over, right? Draymond Green's Twitter story on his podcast about how eerily similar it felt to last summer when he almost left. He thought he was going to the Memphis Grizzlies, and he was like, you know, he said how eerily similar it was when Klay picked up the phone and called him, telling him he was going to Mavericks. How crazy it was, and it came down to financials. It came down to respect. Klay felt he was disrespected because Richard Jefferson told a story of how he talked to Klay in like Christmas, and Klay was like, "Yeah, it's great. Pay me my money." You know what I'm saying? Like, so it was a respect thing. It was a financials thing. It was just in general what, you know what I'm saying? Like, Klay thought he would always get paid as much as possible by the Warriors for the rest of his career. And it just didn't happen that way. And so now he's in Dallas, right? And he's in Dallas. Could have been a Laker. His father wanted him to be a Laker. Michael Thompson, former number one overall pick for the Lakers, wanted his son to be a Laker for obvious reasons. And he ultimately is not a Laker. He's a Maverick. And that could be the piece. That's the kind of piece that puts you over the top. Because what the Mavericks are really, really good at doing is shooting corner threes. What the Mavericks are not really good at doing is shooting above the break threes, as they are called, which is wing threes. They're not good at those. So when that Boston, we talked about it during the finals, but Boston would start cutting off the corner and then Dallas couldn't shoot. Klay Thompson can't shoot from anywhere on the court. So that's going to be huge, because now what do you do when Luka and Kyrie inevitably break through the defense? You're going to leave Klay Thompson open. You're going to have to rotate. But if you rotate off, now those corner threes are open. So that's going to be huge. There, it was a sign and trade deal in which Josh Green was dumped to the Charlotte Hornets, and 2 second-round picks went back to the Golden State Warriors. And so Dallas is getting Klay Thompson for 3 years, $50 million. They basically presto change old Josh Green into Klay Thompson. Derrick Jones became Najee Marshall. Everything else is pretty much back. So that is what's going on in Dallas. And it's huge for what they can do. I think Dallas is going to have a chance to be really, really good next season. James Harden is staying with the Clippers. 2 years, $70 million. He had him over a barrel. I mean, I'm gonna do this quickly, but he had him over a barrel when Paul George went to the Sixers. Because now I know you got the money and you need stars to open this new arena with. Yeah, paid me my money. Like, he didn't max, but he got a bigger, big bag. Probably way bigger bag than he would have had had Paul George stayed, of course. But, you know, his options out there probably wasn't that high. And then the Celtics paid their own, spent money. They were in the news. Tatum signed a 5-year, $314 million Supermax. It is the largest contract in NBA history. So kudos to him. Kudos to him and his family. That is, he already had generational wealth coming off of the rookie extension. Now he has multi-generational wealth. Deuce's grandkids are taken care of now. So kudos for the Tatum family. Say Jason Tatum. Derek White signs his generational deal. 4 year, $125.9 million. Huge money for him. He deserved it. He fought the long way. He went up through the Spurs and then basically got dumped. And then he ended up in Boston and had some major plays in the finals. One of the best two-way players in the league. Congratulations to him. Xavier Tillman Sr. Was a Grizzly for the first couple years of his career. Ended up in Boston. Wins a ring. He signed a 2-year deal to stay. And then the ownership group, led by Wick Roosbeck, is selling the team. The Boston, him and his partners in Boston Basketball Company, LLC, bought the team in 2002. And so they stewarded the team in 08, and they stewarded the team in the 08 title and this last title. And through over the next 4 years, they will be transitioning ownership away from Wick Roosbeck and Company. They'll be selling a majority of their shares planned by spring 2025. Wick will stay on as governor through the final stage of the sale in 2020 through 2028. So there's still 4 more years where Roosbeck will be in charge. However, he won't be footing a majority of the bill. The majority of the bill being the fact that, you know, this is going to be the most expensive roster in NBA history, bar none. 2024 offseason, they'll have a luxury tax / salary bill of $450 million, which is 80-ish million more than the Warriors had when they broke the record for most expensive roster ever. This roster, the top six players, or starting five, top six, whatever, have about $1 billion worth of contracts that are owed, and so they're going to push the salary cap and the luxury tax bill as high as they can go. So that's what's going on in Boston. Tobias Harris, couple of quick hitters real fast. Tobias Harris signed a 2 years, $52 million deal with the Detroit Pistons. Detroit sneakily had a solid offseason. They gave Kay Cunningham his rookie max. They traded for Tim Hardaway. They signed Tobias Harris. They've had a sneaky good offseason. They also hired J.B. Bickerstaff as head coach, replacing Monty Williams. But that is all. Trahan London, who was the GM for the Pelicans, he's now running the basketball operations in Detroit. So he's had a sneaky good offseason in Detroit. So kudos to them. They won't be god-awful. Hopefully they'll be pretty solid. Chris Paul was waived by the Golden State Warriors. However, he, within a day, signs a one-year, $11 million deal with the San Antonio Spurs. So he's going to be their vet on the floor, that coach on the floor. He's always had a good relationship with Pop. And reportedly, Pop helped sell him on the culture and what they're trying to do. And so he's going to be there as the point guard, as always, to lead the team. The Chris Paul effect is real. So the Spurs were 120% of their games. It would not surprise me if they're a 37-38 win team. If for no other reason than A, Wimby's going to get better. B, Chris Paul's there. So now I spoke about last podcast, some of those awful, and I do mean awfully hard, possessions where it looked like, has any of them ever played NBA basketball before? Those possessions no longer exist. They don't exist because Chris Paul's there, right? And so he can't give you 37, 38 minutes a night anymore for 82 games, but 30 minutes a night for 70 games, for 65 games is very reasonable. They'll probably be above 500 in the games he plays, probably be below 500 in the games he don't. But that's the games where Trey Jones will take over and others. Hopefully, Spurs can be a team that'll push for a play-in spot in the West. Because let's be honest, the NBA is better when more people get to see Wimby. Personally, I enjoy watching him play. Just the Spurs as a group was so hard to watch. So I know a lot of the world will be watching the Olympic Games, the Olympic basketball trials. I always watch as much Team USA as possible. I'm going to put France on my list. I'm going to want to watch as much France as possible just because of Wimby, right? They're in an advantage because they're automatically in due to the fact they're the host country. So I think the host country automatically qualifies for like everything. So that's always interesting because like sometimes even when they're bad in an event, they'll enter it and get like destroyed, but they're in it, right? So they're automatically in being in the host country. So they're just practicing, getting ready for the Olympic trials itself, getting ready for the Olympic Games itself. But I definitely put France on the list due to Wimby. And I think that if, you know, it's late in the season and teams are getting flexed out of national TV spots and it's, you know, a 30-37 Spurs team, currently the 11th seed in the West versus a 32-35 Warriors team or something that's 10th seed in the West and their TNT Saturday night, like everybody gets to watch Wimby, right? Or TNT Thursday night, everybody gets to watch Wimby. And so I think that's good for the NBA. And I think hopefully Chris Paul and of course the development of Wimby in general will help out the Spurs get to a bigger, better place. And then lastly, but certainly not least, Isaiah Hartenstein, who would have been the last piece of the Knicks puzzle. Many said they might have predicted them to lock up the East along with Boston. Isaiah Hartenstein goes to Oklahoma City on a 3-year, $87 million contract. A couple of Knicks fans were upset that I knew, one in particular. Hartenstein, but the Knicks did everything they could. The most they could offer him due to contractual, just the CBA and other restrictions, just overlay it, say the CBA, they can only offer 4 years, 72, which is $18 million a year. When Oklahoma City went to damn near 30 a year, that was the end of that negotiation. And so Isaiah Hartenstein heads to Oklahoma City, 3 years, $87 million. But up next, we're going to have our Jack's Hot Take, which is going to be a discussion on the WNBA and how we're looking so far in this season. Welcome back into the show, and we're going to discuss the WNBA as they are barreling towards their All-Star break. The All-Star game, I believe, is July 20th in Phoenix will be the All-Star game. This year, due to the Olympics, it is set up like Team USA versus the WNBA All-Stars. They do it every 4 years. It is July 20th, 7:30. Watch on ABC in Phoenix. But they do it every 4 years. Whenever the Olympic break is in the season, they, of course, do the Team USA versus the WNBA All-Stars. A lot of fans were, before I talk about teams and how the game's going to go, a lot of fans were complaining about the voting process. And they were saying certain players may have made it if the Team USA players weren't included on the list. I understand the argument. Because a fan, the average fan, most fans, myself included, I didn't even think about it when I voted, weren't gonna think about, oh, Aja Wilson's on Team USA. I don't have to vote for Aja Wilson. She's gonna be in the game anyway. Oh, Diana Taurasi is on Team USA. I don't have to vote for Diana Taurasi. She's gonna be in the game anyway. Oh, like me, I'm a huge, as I say, Aja Wilson, trying to think about it, I'm a massive fan of. Oh, I don't have to vote for Breanna Stewart. Breanna Stewart's going to be in the game already. Instead, the top six vote getters were on Team USA. So they had to take them out. And then whoever else filled in that the next six or so spots were fan vote. And then the last six on the All-Star team were coach vote, were coaches' picks. So, yes, could a Camila Cardoza maybe have gotten more votes if you took out Breanna Stewart, Brittany Griner, Alyssa Thomas, Aja Wilson, and Nafisa Collier weren't even on the list? For the forwards, maybe a Camila Cardoza gets a lot more votes. Maybe she gets an All-Star Game or fan vote. We don't know. But what I do know is, number one, there was a couple of snubs on the All-Star team from the coaches. We're going to talk about that in a second. But number two, in a normal All-Star game, a lot of those players still get voted in, and the bench is still decided by the fans, still decided by the coaches. It's just like the NBA, where the fans vote the starters and then the coaches vote the reserves. The fans vote the starters in WNBA All-Star game, and the coaches do the reserves. So in the grand scheme of life, it didn't affect – it might have affected one or two people, but it wasn't a big, like, oh my, there's this massive snub from the fans that may have not have happened if – that person, if the Team USA wasn't on the ballot at all. So, you know, like I said, Camila Cardoza was a name I heard floated out. Probably makes it if there's no Team USA. Marina Mabry may get in if there's no Team USA vote. You know, that sort of thing may have happened if Team USA is not even eligible for the All-Star voting. But since they were, this is the team we have. So the WNBA All-Star team is DaWanna Bonner, Aaliyah Boston, or DaWanna Bonner, the Connecticut Sun. Indiana Fever have Aaliyah Boston, Caitlin Clark, and Kelsey Mitchell. Also with Connecticut Sun, Brianna Jones, Alicia Gray from the Atlanta Dream, Derek Ahimba from the Los Angeles Sparks, Jonquil Jones from the New York Liberty, Kayla McBride from the Minnesota Lynx, Arike Ogunbowale from the Dallas Wings, Nneka Ogumike from the Seattle Storm, and Angel Reese from the Chicago Sky. Kaylin Clark and Angel Reese headline the team. Why are they headlining the team? A, they're the two biggest stars on the team. Two, or B, they are the first time, this is the first time since 2014 two rookies have made the All-Star team. So they were the pillars of this draft class. They are continue to be the pillars of historic success. Maybe a Cameron Brink might have gotten in. I don't know, but she was hurt. But they are the pillars of this draft class, star power wise. They've been the pillar of this draft class on the court. And so just they're showing what they can do. And so they continue to make history. They were both fan voted in, and I think even if they weren't, I think they would have been in from the coaches. So now the situation was, oh, they got in because of fan votes. Like, yeah, fan votes voted them in, but I think they were both in regardless. I think they're two of the best 24 players in the world. So they were in regardless, right? So kudos to them. I have a couple of problems with the team. Number one, one major problem I have was Kennedy Carter not being an All-Star. And the person, and of course, when you do that, you always go, well, who do you take out? And I think it's Kayla McBride or Breonna Jones. Now I get why you have a Kayla McBride on the team. She would be the only Lynx on the court on the All-Star team. Now, of course, Nafisa Collier is on Team USA, so she'd be there. And Kelly McBride scoring 15 a night, not a big thing. And then Breonna Jones, I think, was another one I was kind of iffy on because she is 13-5-2. I would have gone Kennedy Carter
in that spot. Cause she's, her stats are 15-3-3, but I just don't see how the Fever can have three players and be one of the worst teams in the WNBA and the Sky have one player. So that was kind of my issue there. But Kennedy Carter would have been my pick. Like I said, probably either instead of Breanna Jones or Kayla McBride. But other than that, no real big snubs off the top of my head I can think of. So pretty good list from WNBA. Solid by them. It's going to be a great game. I expect it, if it's close late, to pick up. But I don't think it's going to be close late. I think Team USA is going to run away and hide in the first half. And then it'll be a Caitlin Clark. If the 4-point line's there, it might keep it close. Because Caitlin Clark may shoot all fours. Like, if they have the 4-point spots again, like last year they had the 4-point spots and Kelsey Plum hit one. I think the game was like 2-for-20 from the 4-point spot. Like, if that 4-point spot's there, Caitlin may keep them in it because she'll hit like 4 or 5 fours, you know, and just keep the All-Stars in it. Angel Reese and the way she plays is going to be a killer because a lot of times it's not very physical down low. So her going for rebounds and stuff, she may score a lot. You know what I'm saying? But I'm just looking at the star potential of Team USA. It's just too much. I think Team USA is going to run away and hide. Couple of quick hitters in the WNBA. Shout out to the New York Liberty. They're the best, or one of, if not the best, start 20-game start in WNBA history. They're 17-3. They're absolutely rolling. If they only have one loss on their schedule, they probably regret, and that's the Commissioner's Cup. And they lost it to Minnesota in a game. I just don't think they were told. They were locked in. But it was effectively a road game. It was a road home game. Because instead of playing in Barclays, something was happening in the Barclays. So they ended up having to play in Long Island, which the team took it as an opportunity of a new set of fans get to see us. But instead of our usual Brooklyn fans, but at the same time, it wasn't your normal arena. It wasn't your normal sight lines. It wasn't your normal home court advantage. Your crowd was not as big and boisterous as it would have been if it was in Brooklyn. And then I said, then something else was happening in New York that kicked them out of the Barclays. And so that's what, to me, all those factors kind of led to Minnesota. Minnesota had a great shooting night. Minnesota winning the Commissioner's Cup. The Aces are back, in case anybody was wondering. They've won 5 straight games. All of them with Chelsea Green back in the lineup. Oh, and update, Asia Wilson's the best player in the world. She is A1. She's the best player in the world, plain and simple. She's the best female dribbling a basketball. And then the rookie of the year race is simple. To me, it started off the year like this, and then it kind of dipped for a second and kind of expanded for a little while. Cameron Brink might have put her nose in it. The rookie of the year race is 2 people. It's Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark. It's the only 2 rookie All-Stars. It's simple. It's going to come down to which level of history you want. Caitlin Clark's going to have probably the best all-around rookie season in the history of the WNBA. In terms of points, rebounds, and assists, she's also got an WNBA record turnover pace going comfortably. On the other side, Angel Reese is going to be a historic level of double-double. She's got her 11th straight double-double. The streak could end at any time, but like, that's never been done in the history of the WNBA. Regardless, rookie or not, she may end up averaging near a double-double, which I think if she averaged a double-double, it'd be the first time in the NBA history a rookie's ever done that. Like, so, and then their teams are fighting for playoff spots. So this is 2 historic level rookies. They're the pillars of the future. They're going to battle it out. I don't want co-rookies of the year. And I think that's where this could be headed. And the thought just hit me, that's where this could be headed, was that co-rookies of the year, almost to avoid narrative, they would just go co-rookie of the year, you know, Angel and Caitlin. And so I don't want that to happen. Again, I don't want it just to be like a narrative dodge. Oh, we dodged it. We tried to avoid controversy, whatever. They both deserve it. Whatever. Pick one. You know, like Carmelo Anthony doesn't have a rookie of the year in his house because of LeBron James. Like, pick one. Like, so that's what I don't want. I don't want co-rookies of the year. Right now, if I had to pick a rookie of the year, I'm picking Angel Reese. And it's just from a leadership perspective. It's just from she's doing something in WNBA historic. Like, Caitlin's doing a lot of stuff for rookies. So this has a couple of WNBA records. Her fandom is insane in terms of how they're traveling to see her, watch her play. Like, the Aces had the biggest crowd in Las Vegas ever to watch a basketball game and the fifth biggest attendance ever, standing room only in certain spots. Like, her fandom's ridiculous, right? Like, she's doing stuff marketing-wise that's insane. But on the court, she has a bad body language. She turns the ball over a lot. She has to put bad shots. She's horribly inefficient. Angel Reese is inefficient in her own right, but she's doing stuff, again, from a rebounding and points perspective that hasn't been done in the history of the WNBA. So right now, I would lean Angel, and her team's record's a little bit better. Right now, I would lean Angel Reese for my Rookie of the Year. I would not be mad, obviously, if it is Caitlin Clark. But that is all I have for you guys today. Thanks for rocking with me over this hour. Have a great 4th of July. Spend time with your family. Stay safe. Pop some fireworks for those of you who are Aries that you can. For those who are Aries that you cannot, watch fireworks on television. Barbecue. Jump in a pool if you're into that. Hang out with your family. Enjoy the off day. For all of us that get off, enjoy the off day. Have a great time. This is your host, Justin Jackson, signing out.